Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards, coming to you from Radio Moscow. Sorry, that was premature. That doesn't start until after the 20th of January. I'm sorry, kind of a fraudulent slip, if you will. I thought we were broadcasting from the Western Kremlin in Washington, D.C., but our main man hasn't taken over until just about 2 to 3 minutes after noon on the 20th of January. A new America. And for those of you that don't believe it, watch, wait, and see. In fact, the press conference that President-elect Donald Trump held this afternoon, his first in over 6 months, really was something interesting. He's in kind of a defensive mood right now. All of those of us of the communist nation understands he's a little ticked off about the fact that they're saying that he didn't win the election on his own, that Vladimir Putin, the supreme leader of the Russian Federated Republic, actually did a lot of things to help him, if you will. But, you know, we're not really supposed to talk about this, even on Radio Free America, if you will. It's a new day in America, and for African Americans, people of color, you better stay on your toes, baby, because these folks get ready to do a number. We have a lot of things to talk about tonight. My associate, Mr. Allen, is still on assignment. Hopefully he'll be back with us by probably maybe the 1st of March. I'm not totally sure. His itinerary and the obligations that he has are pretty overwhelming in some regards. But he will be back before the early part of the spring. But we have a lot of information. This program, by the way, and Let Us Reaffirm, is about the news, if you will. It is about those things that are happening in and around us, if you will, those things that are affecting us, the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. And so we feel very proud. By the way, all respect and deference kudos to outgoing President Barack Obama and his lovely family, if you will. His farewell speech in Chicago, Illinois last night to over 20,000 Americans now. As I said, we are truly a red country. President tried to give appropriate notification that things have changed. As we said on last week's program and the week before, the polls, the research clearly shows that 37% of white Republicans who voted for Donald Trump in an election in which he did not win the popular vote, but doesn't make any difference when you're in what is now the Western Kremlin. You do it through the so-called Electoral College. And by the way, don't believe, my friends, that the Russians, you know, the Russian Federated, did not also tamper with voting machines and et cetera. Oh, the United States couldn't handle that if the kind of absolute clarification, clarity, and et cetera was shown. And it is quite obvious that the Trumpites, if you will, a name that we need to use, and it's appropriate, the Trumpites, are not happy that the victory by Donald at the Electoral College, because he lost the popular vote by almost 3 million people, 3 million voters, by the way. Of course, the Democrats, Hillary Clinton and others, did a poor job, should have got out, mingled more with the masses, really tried to turn out the electorate and et cetera, didn't do it. You have a man who, I'm not sure, by the way, if Donald Trump is even interested in completing his 4-year term. The only thing he's concerned about is making money for he and his family and his associates and friends. I, like millions of other Americans, I assume, have been watching the hearings, if you will, confirmation hearings. It's been interesting. I never saw so many people that don't have a clue about what government's about. They have a clear understanding, a keen understanding of what making money and corruption is about. And President Trump is going to, President-elect Trump is going to lead the way in being as defiant as he has to be, using the bully pulpit, if you will, of the office of the, I call him America's new commissar, if you will, for those of you that don't know what a commissar is. we suggest you look it up, but what it is the political officer for the Russian, quote-unquote, military, if you will. It is a person in a significant and supreme position of authority and et cetera. The commissar. Commissar, of course, is Vladimir Putin, who is located in Moscow in the Kremlin. And his new associate, if you will, is now located in Washington, D.C. In 9 days in the place called the White House, which we have redesignated, we have renamed, if you will. We Trumpites have renamed the Western Kremlin, if you will. What Donald Trump, we need to say this at the top of this program, because we're going to be talking a lot tonight about the many problems, the multiplicity of problems that are getting ready to confront Americans of all colors, nationalities, persuasions, etc. The real problem is that the Trumpites want you to begin to concentrate on enemies of color. In other words, the North Koreans, the Chinese, the Iranians, if you will, Vietnamese, whoever it is that is a dark-skinned person. And no one wants to talk about that in the so-called media. In fact, Donald Trump is really terrifying the Fourth Estate, the American Fourth Estate, if you will. The information that came out during the intelligence briefings and et cetera, I don't know why so many people are pretending to be surprised. I understand why Donald Trump pretends that there is no way that the Russians and his good friend, a brilliant man, as he has called and identified him, he does not identify him and refer to him as the butcher and war crimes violator. We're not supposed to do that. And by the way, within a number of months in this country, with the stepping on the neck of the so-called free press in America, they too, and albeit CNN, who took quite a whipping today, and NBC and all the rest of them, we know where Fox stands, if you will. We see that Greta Van Susteren has shown up over at MSNBC, so the agent provocateurs, if you will, are being moved around, and in about 4 months, 5 months, there will be such a censorship here in the United States with regards to news and information. Folks won't have a clue of what is happening until maybe they hear the stomping of Russian combat boots on the sacred American soil. It will be interesting to see how the anticipated meeting between Vladimir Putin and President-elect Donald Trump will go. Trump has to convince a significant segment of the American population that Vladimir Putin is a good guy, if you will, a good Russian, a Rusky, as they used to call him. You know, it's interesting on this particular part of this program that even Ronald Reagan would roll over in his grave if he could see the kiss and let's tell relationship between the Trumpites and the communists, who are really one and the same. And we repeat that again, the Trumpites and the communists. This country is more, quote-unquote, red, and I'm not talking about the political red that comes up every 4 years with regards to the blue states and the red states. No, no, I'm talking about the fellow travelers, the folks that were beginning to represent a threat to the United States during the Depression of the 1930s, who later decided to go with the communists, if you will, against the fascists, which, of course, was Italy, Germany, and Japan, if you will, though the Japanese considered themselves to be of a little different persuasion. And, of course, we don't talk with great clarity with regards to what the issues were between the European Western white Christian nations and the Japanese. It was much different than what was going on between the National Socialists, the Nazis, and the fascists of Benito Mussolini, if you will, the Italians, if you will. It's a part of the history that is slowly being purged, erased, cleansed, if you will, not allowing individuals to know and to understand. I'm just fascinated by the lack of information, knowledge, and history that so many of our young people have who spend all their time clicking on their iPhones, smartphones, and et cetera. Actually, the phones are smarter than you, quote-unquote, because they understand that you do not understand what is happening around you, if you will, that you're being controlled by little, like little robots, really, if you will. Oh, by the way, and boy, I'm telling you, in this town that I'm in here, the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Kwanzaa and Martin Luther King Day, MLK, have just disappeared. It's like a decree, a directive went out and said that black folks will no longer talk about Martin Luther King Jr. They already don't talk about Malcolm, if you will, and certainly don't talk about real progressive African-Americans and et cetera. I'm not talking about progressive blacks that are defined by white folks. I'm talking about progressive blacks that are defined by their activities and their belief in the survival of the black nation and of black people. But there is no mention in this city at all, let me say the Twin Cities, the metro area, state of Minnesota. It used to be just even 5 years ago, and while we're coming back to Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, it used to be that there was always occasions of historical reflection, festivities, if you will, particularly with the Kwanzaa, taking a look at the beauty of blackness and et cetera. And just in less than a year's time, probably much of it had to do as it pertains to Kwanzaa with the death by illness of the legendary Brother Marshall, who Rex Marshall, for those that have probably already got for 20 years in this town, Rex Marshall kept Kwanzaa alive, as well as joining forces with those that were keeping alive the memory, the legacy, the greatness, the patriotism of Martin Luther King Jr. and others. By the way, on our television program to be aired this coming Sunday, we talk quite extensively about how no one seems to be comfortable, we are here on this program, with identifying Martin Luther King Jr. and others as patriots, if you will. You know, white folks are great about talking about how patriotic they are, if you will. You know, they're more patriotic than the patriotic saint, if you will. But I've noticed that just as we've gone into MLK month, and, you know, February is also supposed to be our month, the colored month, if you will, when we talk about the history of the sons and daughters of the African. But it is kind of eerie, really. I guess that's the proper way to say it, that so many of young African-Americans that just a couple ago were talking about their blackness and et cetera. You know, blackness is more than just letting your hair grow out, trying to look like the way we brothers did in the 1960s. It has to do with letting your consciousness grow. with letting your sense of blackness grow, with letting your understanding of the importance of you as the son and daughter of Africa to be respected, to be nurtured, and et cetera. Not happening, not happening. It's been very interesting already. Even though we're only into the 11th day of January in the year of our Lord, 2017, it is quite obvious that we've lost any sense of blackness, if you will. Now, that takes us back to what happened today at the press conference by President-elect Donald Trump, who is obviously quite agitated, and he is a man who has a tremendous ego. His ego needs to be stroked, if you will, like, you know, he has, as he said in that, that video that he didn't know was still out there. He, you know, like he likes women who he doesn't have much respect for. But in the election of November 8th, 2016, a lot of white women did go out and vote for him, but actually not enough. We keep reminding our listening audience that Donald Trump lost the election by the popular vote by 2.8 million. That's a lot of votes, if you will. But people have known for a long time that if you strategically win both states, which are basically the southern states and the western along the Rocky Mountain Basin, that you can hang on to do what you have to do. You know, it's a sad commentary. And then this is, they said, this is an education. This is all a part of the next 2 months of Martin Luther King Jr. and then Black history, because we, as Black people, as the sons and daughters of the African, we really don't spend as much time as we should anymore in talking in terms of the richness of the history of the African American. In fact, this man is pouring so much dope, drugs, and et cetera into our community. Chicago, Illinois, my God, they're just killing each other down there. They haven't killed each other like this since in 20-some years. They, you know, and everybody pretends like they can't figure it out. It's about the drugs, man. It's about the dope coming in from Mexico. It's about the program that has been in existence ever since 1985 when a young California assemblywoman by the name of Maxine Waters, now Congresswoman in the Congress of the United States, God bless her, to try to tell folks what was happening in Los Angeles, where at one point in that particular period of time, over 1,000 African Americans were shot and killed, murdered, and et cetera. By the way, not all of these African American deaths are carried out by African Americans. There are death squads that move quietly around the country, as I've identified for the last number of years. Our good friends out there in upper Idaho, if you will, around the Spirit River, Spirit Lake, the specific town of Sandpoint, Idaho, if you will, we've shared with you over the last 4 or 5 years the killing ground that they have up there in the mountains of northern Idaho, if you will. The same people that almost, what was it, God, what was it, 7 years ago to this coming Monday, that white terrorists almost killed upwards of 2,000 people when they put in place and it was an ugly, nasty bomb, too. It was both a biological bomb, which meant that there were certain materials and a structure that were incorporated into the explosives and et cetera that would have had a tremendous effect. In fact, the person that did it, you don't even hear any more about him. The individual who actually was a military person who was actually posted at Fort Lewis, Washington, which is at the other end of the state. But for those of you that like to work your computer, get on your computer. Take a look at the information. The story in the Spokane Spokesman white newspaper, if you will, wrote a number of articles in 2012 about who this gentleman was, if you will. We talked about it quite a bit on our television, radio programs, and et cetera. And if anyone wants to text us and ask us specifically some questions after we go off the air tonight. And we will be on for an hour and a half because there is so much happening also in our beloved Twin Cities, the bombing in Spokane 6 years ago. That was a paramilitary operation with individuals posted at Fort Lewis, Washington, who were very much involved and had been positioned to begin a campaign of terror. It was similar to the plan down there in Kansas that no one talks about. And that's how we do miss the telephone calls and et cetera. But Mr. Allen will be back with us in 4 or 5 weeks, and we'll hopefully, open those phone lines. But at this point, information and news doesn't stop because one person is not aboard the ship, if you know what I mean. And so up there in Idaho, in Sand Point, if you will, there has been for quite some time a very strong, extremist, dangerous right-wing paramilitary group that had been in training. They do some periodic killing up there. They periodically will seek out a young, unsuspecting African-American, if you will, traveling up in that area. Oh, by the way, the hero of the extreme right. In fact, we understand there was even some sorrow in the Trump Towers today that Dylan Root did not attempt to save himself, but then he already knew he was a dead man walking, so it didn't make any difference. We would encourage you to go back and listen to our radio programs during the weeks following the outrageous massacre of 9 African Americans in Charleston, North Carolina, by Dylan Root, who did not act alone. We get so sick and tired of listening to the white media controlling and making sure our minds are right with regards to conspiracy and who really it was that pulled the chain. But you think that this young white boy who now faces the death chamber, if you will, you think that he put that together? You think that he knew how to do the kind of surveillance that he did? One of the most beloved ministers and political leaders in the state of South Carolina, if you will, Reverend Pinckney. Come on, man. We are back then, and this ties in with the new commissar who will take over as president of these United States on the early afternoon of the 20th of January. It's difficult to make people understand on just how dangerous things are in this country and what the plan is for handling the Negro problem, the Black problem, the NIG problem, and et cetera. But let me just go back over something with Dylan Root. And if anybody has any questions they want to text to me, those who know this particular phone number, at this particular phone, feel free to text the information, and we will analyze it and decide how we will handle it. But the night that Dylan Root massacred all of them Black folks there in that church, this white man went in there and said, I come in here to pray with y'all and talk about Jesus and et cetera. When he fled Charleston, if you will, and went up towards Columbia and then sped back up going towards Charlotte, though he was actually going to a place called Mars, North Carolina, where there right now, as we speak, is a very sophisticated paramilitary camp where there is preparation being made for ultimately, in the next 5 months, a significant level of activity dealing with the Negro problem, if you will. It isn't bad enough that they move significant amount of narcotics and drugs in concert with the with the Mexicans, if you will, and the cartels into the African-American community. We repeat again what we said to you earlier. A lot of y'all know a lot of these killings, a lot of these murders in Chicago are a direct outgrowth of the conflict going on as it pertains to the control of drugs on the streets of Chicago. Our people, our race is caught up in the middle of it. And actually, all we are is a proxy for the cartels of Mexico and Colombia specifically. But then that time, but we repeat again, a woman of great vision who still serves her nation and her constituency, Maxine Waters, in a speech to the California General Assembly, warned, as did Adam Clayton Powell and Malcolm X and others, with regards to what was really being planned. We always encourage people, in fact, we show it oftentimes on our television program, the book, The Man Who Cried I Am, if you will. Heck of a book. Actually, it is authentic, if you will. The information that led to that book being written came from Adam Clayton Powell Jr., William Dawson from Harlem and from the south side of Chicago, the only two Negro congressmen for over 20 years in the Congress of the United States. It was the master plan. Actually, it really was called the King Alfred Plan, a very sinister plan developed by very powerful security forces here in the United States. But The Man Who Cried I Am, if you can find a copy of it, actually was taken off the market in 1967. It took me. I had a copy. It disappeared, if you will. And I had to go all the way to London, in England, through associates and et cetera, to obtain a copy, which I now always show on my television program here in the Twin Cities. But by the way, back to Dylan Root. The question that no one ever would answer, and they did not want him to answer it, and the reason that he has been convinced and brainwashed that it would be best for him to accept the death penalty was that 14-hour trip that he took to get from Charleston to outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, and that 6 hours or better that he spent in a town called Hope, South Carolina. For those that listen to these programs and get them back on demand, we would suggest that you're welcome to go back in that particular period of time. Hope, South Carolina, an interesting little place, if you will, just about as interesting as our Mars, North Carolina, if you will, where Mr. Root was trying to get to. If he had not decided to take a nap, if you will. If he would have gotten up there in that part and got by Shelby, North Carolina, where he was apprehended. By the way, wasn't interesting. He never shot him, killed him, or nothing like that. If he would have got up there in them mountains to that survivalist camp, he would have never been apprehended, if you will. Yeah. For those of you that tonight, you know, is all a part of just kind of being upfront, being honest about just what the situation is here. We've named Hope, South Carolina, if you will. We would call your attention to Mars, North Carolina, and the survivalist camp up there. You know, there are certain places in the United States where there's a more than disproportionate number of African Americans, particularly African American males, that always seem to disappear. you know what I'm saying? Time they were seen, last time they were heard of. That place up there in Sandpoint, Idaho, is clearly another place. If you are an African American and you're making a mistake of traveling, let's say from my Twin Cities here up through the Dakotas across Montana, and then going across that small strip there of northern Idaho, going towards Spokane and then on towards Seattle, et cetera. There have been more than a disturbing number of African Americans that have disappeared up there around Spirit Lake, Spirit Mountain, and the Spirit River, and specifically Sandpoint, Idaho, if you will. But the system has you now believing that all of this is hogwash and this false news and et cetera. Law and order will be the order of the day. And that then brings us to Jeff Sessions. I saw something today that makes me understand that the whipping boss, the whipping negro, is still alive and well. I saw three brothers had the nerve to be sitting on the panel with the legendary and beloved John Lewis, Cory Booker out of New Jersey, and the new chairman of the Black Political Caucus, Congressman Richmond. And they had three brothers up there, man. You know, it was, what was interesting to me was all big cats. I mean, all of these cats, the y'all that watched it today, they were all big black men. I mean, they were big. In fact, one admitted that he was the former football player at Auburn University, graduated in 1981, later became an assistant an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern / Middle District of Alabama. Loves Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is the greatest white man that he ever knew. Then the other next brother spoke after they had allowed the final African-American elected official to speak. And I kept looking at these brothers. Man, they was all 280, 300 pounds, and I said, what is it that's familiar about this? And I said, oh, my God, these big, burly, if you will, brothers, you know, the other one was a former United States Marshal, if you will, and he talked about how great Jeff Sessions was, great white man. And then there was this cat, William Smith, I tell you. He had the title of formerly General Counsel to the Judiciary, the Senate Judiciary Committee, another one of them big brothers. And he talked in terms of how Jeff had had him to his house to eat and how much he loved him and how he had worked so closely with him when he was a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I'm like, yes, yes, this is a reenactment of how plantation worked. Yes, sir. Yes, 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 it was. And like I said, all three of these brothers were about 280 to 300 pounds. And I said, God dang, that represents the whipping ball. See, Massa used to do something very interesting. We have enough and a lot of time on tonight's program. In order to control the masses of coloreds, darkies, as he would refer to them, and their little sucklings and et cetera, he would always get the biggest and strongest blacks, and he would cultivate them. He would do the brain drain, if you will, and they would become what was called on the plantation the whipping boss, if you will. They was the Negro that would go down into the shanties and into the South 40s and keep order and keep control, if you will. It's kind of like the coppers, the Jews that led their own people into the crematoriums, if you will, to die, and et cetera. But long before the concentration camps of Nazi Germany, there were these whipping boss, if you will. Now, this is not to be confused with the overseer. Overseer was always a white man, if you will. But the white man would always pick the strongest, biggest, colored, black. In fact, some refer to them as Mandingo, but of course the purpose of the Mandingo was to service the women, but primarily was to also service the white mistress, if you will, because her husband, the white master, was busy down there, quote unquote, in the South 40, enjoying the fruits of the many young black women as they were violated, raped, and et cetera. And well, it's a history within itself. The movie 12 Years a Slave and the latest one that dealt with Nick Turner were clear illustrations. But you have to take some time, particularly for those of you that are the so-called millennium. Yeah, you need to really do some research. But today I saw a reenactment. I saw the plantation in its fullest glory as I saw three black men, all who had been given position. None of them had been elected to anything. The opposite three, the opposition three, as we said, Senator Booker, Congressman Lewis, and Representative Richmond, if you will, of Louisiana. And it was quite an intriguing game that Chairman Grassley of Iowa played. And Representative Richmond said the right thing when he pointed out that it was disrespectful and an insult that a man of the stature and the legacy of John Lewis, a man who almost gave his life, who was there on the Edmund Pettus Bridge and et cetera, that they were the last group that was allowed with these three, quote-unquote, black whipping masters to speak. And I was glad to see Representative Richmond stand up for the cause. I watched some of his colleagues because basically every member, Democratic member of the Black Caucus, was present in support. The only other two black members, one from Carolina and the other one, this young sister from Utah, not sure if they were there or not. But it was interesting, and the message was well delivered, if you will, and for historians such as myself, I understood. I have no respect for it, but I understand because fight and defend the First Amendment, the right of free speech and expression and such. But for those of you that watched it on CNN or MSNBC or et cetera, go back and take a look and just make yourself think. Just the size, all three of them brothers, if you will, a former U.S. Marshal, if you will, a former assistant U.S. attorney, and of course, in the case of Smith, he was just, quote-unquote, Jeff Sessions' favorite negro that always liked to hang around Massa, if you will. He said, I love Massa. He said, I love him. I think all three of them did. They talked in terms of how they respected and loved Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is one of the most repudiated racists in the history of the United States Congress, if you will. He's right up there with Bill Bowe, Storm Thurmond, and such. Oh, by the way, on that particular point, for the purpose of tonight's program, late last night, MSNBC broke the story and was broken earlier by one of the Facebooks of a letter from the beloved King Jr., Greta Scott King. It was a letter in which she denounced Jeff Sessions. She talked in terms of her firsthand knowledge. Now, this letter was written in 1986, and it had been sent to the then chair of the Judiciary Committee, the gentleman Storm Thurmond, one of the great segregationists and Ku Klux Klansmen in the history of the United States Senate. And don't you know that white rascal took that letter and put it in the files. He should have just went on and done what white folks oftentimes do with correspondence from black people, just went ahead and shredded it. But for whatever reason, I think it was because the mail had been opened, which is normally what happens at that level of government. And the secretary and his chief of staff or et cetera knew that Coretta Scott King had sent this letter, a hell of a letter, my friends. For those of you that are not aware of it, et cetera, again, you can authenticate, if you will, by going to MSNBC. Rachel Meadows, in fact, again, to repeat the name, Rachel Meadows, late last night, introduced the letter shown on the screen, read from the letter, if you will, and that letter was never given to the committee. And apparently Jeff Sessions thought that letter had been destroyed, but for some reason or not, it was not destroyed. Now, there was not a single real mention of that letter from the late widow, the wife of Martin Luther King Jr., if you will. And that in itself was a crime, and I think to some degree that's what Cory Booker, United States Senator from the state of New Jersey, and John Lewis, congressman from Georgia. By the way, Congressman Lewis, who brings just a wealth of legacy and et cetera, reminded his fellow congressional colleagues that he knew all about the part of Alabama because John Lewis was born in the so-called Black Belt of Alabama, born just a short distance from where Jeff Sessions was born. And in a way that was commensurate with the amount of time that they had allotted to them, the three African-Americans of principle. The other three African-Americans were, just as he said, whipping niggers that had been told to get up there and talk about what a great white man Jeff Sessions was. But it was quite clear that John Lewis was sending a message that he knew what kind of white man Jeff Sessions was. And then later, our Representative Richmond, chairman of the Black Congressional Caucus, representative from Louisiana, finally did something that I had seen for the 2 days that I watched Jeff Sessions. I've watched Jeff Sessions for years, if you will. Know well of him, know well of what kind of Caucasian he is, what kind of Southern fundamentalist, Ku Klux Klan racist that he is. Yes, fundamentalist, if you will. Always soft-spoken, you know, if he call you, an N-I-G. I mean, it's, of course, behind your back, but he's the kind of white man, plots and plans. And then he measures, just like the three Negroes that showed up to testify for him today to talk about, again, what a great white man he was, how they loved him. I mean, you know, I thought that if there could have been a more private moment, maybe in the men's room, in the Senate office building, that the three brothers would have paid total and absolute homage to him, if you know what I mean. It's, you know, this is kind of still the children's hour, if you will. So we won't say, but I think we've already said, again, if they could have gone into the public restroom with Jeff Sessions, you understand, they would have paid total, absolute homage. I was sad. I wasn't so much sickened because I've seen folks like that. We got them right here in our own beloved Shangri-La, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. They come forward all the time. They love Master more than Master loves himself. In fact, they believe in the system more than it believes in itself. And that's what those three gentlemen, a former assistant U.S. attorney for the Middle District of Alabama, a former United States assistant U.S. Marshal, if you will, for the Middle District of Alabama, if you will, and a brother who was just happy to have had a job with the Judiciary Committee and allegedly been invited to have dinner. Jeff Sessions was home. Now, he never really said that he had really sat at the same table with Jeff Sessions in his house, if you will, but he did indicate how when he was he was called, that there was a time when he had a lunch lasting about an hour and a half with Senator Sessions, who at that time was the Attorney General of the state of Alabama. And this was after Jeff Sessions had been the United States Attorney for the Southern District of Alabama. And, you know, you wanted to measure it, and you understand that Donald Trump and his people have enough assets, if you will, enough money and et cetera. And, of course, now working, quote-unquote, on behest and behalf of Vladimir Putin, the Russian strongman and et cetera, Donald Trump, the Western commissar, if you will get a better idea of how to totally play the game politically. He knows how to play the game business-wise, if you will. In fact, he went to great lengths. He was very frustrated today, Donald Trump was, that it had been alleged that he owes a lot of money to the Russians, who have been financing him and partying with him for quite some time. By the way, on that particular note, I mean, we're just tremendously full of information. That's what it is to be a good journalist, is that Donald Trump's son-in-law, who is going to come in and violate the law, just like his daddy-in-law is going to do with regards to conflict of interest, got caught in a situation in which the son-in-law, after talking about the Chinese like they were little yellow devils, if you will, which what they think they are until they are negotiating and begging the Chinese for some money. I ain't talking about the Chinese on Taiwan. I'm talking about the real Chinese, if you will, the ones that have trillions of American assets and dollars under their custody and control. God help us if anything happens in regards to a conflict or et cetera, because there's going to be a hell of a price to pay. But anyways, Donald Trump's son-in-law had been negotiating. He has bought a building there on, Madison Avenue in the heart of New York City and et cetera, and he's trying to be like his daddy-in-law and build his own. Or maybe they'll call it the Little Trump Building. I'm not sure. And so he needed to get millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars from the Chinese, because Donald Trump is overextended, if you will, and, of course, doesn't have the money to give to his son-in-law, even though Donald Trump keeps saying how much money he's got. Oh, by the way, Donald Trump was defiant today in his press conference in which he said, hell no. He's never going to show his income tax returns. And it was interesting because his candidate for Secretary of State, Mr. Tomlinson, the powerful businessman who sat as the head of ExxonMobil, said the exact same thing. Now, I watched his testimony today. I wanted to be on point, if you will. I wanted to look into the face of white truth. If you will, white integrity, and et cetera. And, you know, the last 2 days, I've never seen so many people tell so many lies, if you will. And I got to tell you, this Donald Trump's blondie, if you will. See, nobody really talks like they should, because when you talk in terms of what Donald Trump demands, women who have to be in his company, you know Kellyanne, you know her husband has to understand what is really going on with regards to this child, if you will, this blonde. I guess it's blonde. I don't know. Some of you women out there can better attest. You can better see. It's not a wig, no doubt about that, but it looks like it's a lot of bleach. But Kellyanne, I tell you, she's a piece of work. But she has always been close, and I just hope it's not her man, because she's married, if you will. But Donald Trump has clearly let it be known during the election and et cetera, what he thinks about women and what he thinks their role is, if you will. And yet no one has had the guts to raise a question about Kellyanne and what is really her relationship, or why it is that Big Donald, if you will, is so enthralled with her, or she with him. And I'm saying all this to talk in terms of something that was said by a professor from Harvard earlier today. Oh, it's been a great day, if you will, who said that issues, the whole thing about the Russians have control of the 45th president of the United States of America, that will be Donald Trump, if you will, that the control of what happens in the United States in the presidency is now in the hands of a foreign power. And I think back on this whole thing of communism, if you will, and now how, starting with Donald Trump and with all of his minions there, if you will, and his son-in-laws and his sons and his daughter-in-laws and all of his nominees and et cetera, it amazes me how we have switched in this country. As I said earlier on this program, there was a time when a Ronald Reagan, the darling of the conservative right here in the United States of America, would have drummed you out of the Republican Party, would have drummed you out of Hollywood, would have drummed you out of the United States of America if he would have dared indicate that you had any sympathy whatsoever for communism, if you will. Joe McCarthy, the great red fighter, if you will, of Wisconsin, Republican out of Wisconsin, must be raising up in whatever part of the cemetery that he is in he has to be right with the rest of them rolling over. People like the great heroes and warriors of white America, Dwight Eisenhower is an example, et cetera. Former President Dwight Eisenhower, who's been gone for a long time, has to be just turning over, listening to a man who carries the flag, the standard, if you will, of the Republican Party, talk in terms of what a great man Vladimir Putin is. Vladimir Putin is a former, and still is, an intelligence officer, trained in the KGB, if you will. Was considered one of the best, one of the most brutal, by the way, and one of the most manipulative, if you will. Oh, yes, yes, Vladimir Putin is a very manipulative individual. And the ease that it appears that he took control. See, I'm always reminded, I'm a movie buff, just like a lot of the other folks, if you will, and I'm reminded of both of the movies, Manchurian Candidate, if you will. The second one had the African-American in it. They decided to put somebody black. The first one only had, for a small minor role, James Edwards. People tend no longer remember him. No relationship at all, except we probably just all came from the same plantation. But I've always been fascinated by what I thought was a well-written script as it pertains to the Manchurian Candidates, but both pictures, if you will, about 30 years apart. And I kind of wonder, you know, how it is that we as a nation is to handle it when we find out that the perceived, notice the word we use, the perceived champion, quote unquote, of the extreme right turns out to be nothing but a little fellow traveler, a little red cousin of Joseph Stalin. And for those of you that don't know your history, Joseph Stalin was the man who put together the dream of Lenin and Marx, Karl Marx and others, to create communism, if you will. And we're not supposed to talk. I had a discussion with some associates over the last 4 or 5 days. It's quite clear that the mainstream media has been told to stay as far away as possible from the fact that this country, at least over a quarter of this country, and at least close to one half of the white population, are extremely sympathetic to the Russians. And here's a scenario as we go into the final 30 minutes, 35 minutes of tonight's program, because we have some local information news that we want to discuss with you. We said earlier at the top of this program, for effect, if you will, and we noticed a couple of text messages, et cetera, coming in on some of our other phones, that, and Kellyanne did it today, tonight, if you will, and I saw Rance Priebus do it with an interview with Wolf of CNN. They were talking about the hacking and et cetera, and they were spitting and carrying on, and both of them slipped up and said China, if you will. Now, here is the both the theory and the nexus and everything else. What Donald and his people would like to do, which is okay with Vladimir Putin because it weakens the United States of America, whichever way that it goes. But this particular country, of course, sits on his doorstep as well as the other little yellow people that they talk about, and that is the Chinese and the North Korean. What they would like to get us into a conversation in this country, and I'm afraid that people are weak enough to go in that direction. What is getting ready to be said to you out there in the general populace is that there's nothing wrong with a white Russian. You know, in the case of white Russians, white and red or right, if you will, it's the little dirty brown-skinned, quote-unquote, yellow, if you will, Chinese and North Koreans and Vietnamese, and the brown-skinned Iranians and ISIS and others. It's those Muslims and et cetera, that are the dirty dogs and are communists and double travelers. See, folk need to really go do their research with the kind of damage that Joseph McCarthy did to this country in the late 1940s and early 50s with the red witch hunts and et cetera. In fact, there is a rather interesting history here in our own beloved Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul with the, and we said it to you earlier at the top of this program, for effect, is that in the 1930s here in the Twin Cities, there was one hell of a battle that was being carried out. In some cases, it was actually in the streets under the guise of the labor movement. In making a decision to go with the fascists, which was Nazi Germany and Italy, if you will, certainly not the Japanese, you know what I'm saying, because they were colored, if you will, or the Russians. And because of a combination of things, particularly the Jewish lobby, who finally realized and woke up that fascism was not their friend, and they still thought that they had the support and trust of Mother Russia. Of course, at the end of the Second World War, the Russians basically told the Jewish population it was time for them to move on. Initially sent them to Belarus, Eastern Poland, if you will, and the Ukraine. And that's one of the reasons that you have the two-state disaster, if you will. The Palestinians have yet to get their state. The Jews have had theirs for a long time, but do have the necessary military protection in the form of nuclear weapons to blow up all of the Arab world. The only problem is that they know that they will be in the middle of all that radiation, if you will, so they need a different approach. That is a program for another time also, because we are not having, and we need to have, but we must have, the right kinds of discussion as people of color. Because in the minds of those that are now close, quote unquote, to the Commissar of the West, Donald Trump, there has to be a racial cleansing. See, that's really what the wall and the Mexicans and immigration was really all about. If you notice, these folks never talk about all these Eastern Europeans, including Russians, that have been coming into the United States ever since the collapse of the quote-unquote Soviet Union. You know, I don't hear anybody talking about any bad Russians. If you go to New York City, the Russian mafia are brutal in the way that they control things, particularly around Brighton Beach. You know, they're in Staten Island and et cetera. Again, that's a discussion for another point in time, but it's something for those of you that are intense listeners to jot down, to take a look at, because that is the next move in the next 4 to 5 months, is to get a better narrative that talks in terms of communist problem, but it's not our friend Vladimir Putin. He is a Caucasian, which is interesting when you talk in terms of the Caucasus and et cetera, that he is a good white communist, and he is not our enemy. And in fact, many of us, this is them, if you're the 37% of white Republicans who said in surveys and et cetera that they had no problem with Mother Russia and communism and et cetera. Now, the problem is the little yellow son of a guns, if you know, the SOBs, the Chinamen, et cetera. Here's the only problem. The Chinese control a whole lot more of the wealth of the United States than they're prepared to ever tell you. Now, some of you that are involved with economics, if you will, that really study, if you will, are not lazy, if you will, do your research, if you will, you know that if there is a conflict between the United States and China, that it will render and rain down upon the United States a level of economic collapse. See, the Chinese have a saying and a philosophy that they know and understand hard times. The United States has really not seen hard times since the 1930s, and even then, the United States had not known hard times as a nation since its founding, quote-unquote, in 1776, 1777, at that little building called Constitutional Hall in Philadelphia. But the Chinese and the North Koreans and others of colors of the persuasions of the Far East maintain they can handle it if you will. In fact, the Chinese already have a number in mind if this thing goes nuclear. Now, we always used to say before the election of the new Commissar of the West is that there would always be a white man in the presidency, and then, of course, Barack Obama came along for 8 years, but even he was watched closely. Who would know better than to push the red button or pick up the red phone? But in the case of the Donald and the crazies that he's got surrounding him, if you will, who will attempt to govern for the next 4 years, you can't be sure, man, that they'll fool around and not get careless and think that they can do a preemptive strike. See, they're already talking about a preemptive strike on North Korea. The only problem is the Chinese have indicated that's not going to happen. And also the United States will have to make a decision to sacrifice approximately 30,000 American troops, because clearly any preemptive strike against North Korea will obliterate South Korea. And it will create a problem, and not since the time of Douglas MacArthur and the conflict along the Yalu, if you will, in the Korean War, where things got so tough for the United States that Douglas MacArthur wanted to nuke China, if you will. Of course, the Russians were not going to allow that, because it's the same narrative that's in play tonight and on the face of this planet. The Chinese and the Russians are not going to allow the Americans to play war games with nuclear warheads in close proximity to their borders, to their major cities, to their industrial area, to their quote-unquote military positions, military enclaves, complexes, and et cetera. It is a dangerous, dangerous game that Donald Trump, Flynn, and some of the others are now preparing to play. They really think that they can bluff the North Koreans, and they can bluff the Chinese into telling the North Koreans to stand down. The Eastern Nine doesn't work like that. And sometimes as you become comfortable with your arrogance, if you will, with your racism, if you will, with the kind of narratives that you put out there to a mass of people that are absolutely confused about what the heck is really going on, that you overplay your hand. You go beyond the diving board. You go beyond the cliff, if you will. You fall into a chasm in which you can't get out. But, hey, you know, these folks, if you will, I've seen it over the last couple of days in the hearings. They consider themselves to be of such significant intelligence and intellect and greatness and et cetera that there's no way that they will make a mistake, that they will make a wrong calculation, because they are God's gift to this planet. Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of us that share this planet, and in fact, there's a whole lot more people, quote-unquote, of color, be they brown or yellow or black, than there are those who are white, if you will. Even some of the European nations are beginning to become very uneasy with the philosophical philosophy that they already, through their own intelligence services and et cetera, know coming out of Trump Tower, if you will. But it is too late. The election was stolen, clearly. Vladimir Putin, in fact, Vladimir Putin should be given the Nobel Peace Prize, if you will, for putting together a brilliant plan. And this is something that the Russians clearly have been working on for a long time. Nobody, let me say it like this as we move on to the final 25 minutes of tonight's program. No one at this point, except this program, has the intestinal fortitude to indicate what will ever happen if it is found out that for a long time that the new commissar in the West, President-elect Donald Trump, was in fact a Soviet sleeper. Think about it, my friends, particularly those of you that are intellectually up to it, if you will. What if Donald Trump was a Soviet or Russian sleeper, if you will, and had been cultivated psychologically and otherwise over the last 20 years? Quite a coup. And in our estimation here at the Black Focus, our qualifications qualifications and qualifiers enough to make Vladimir Putin in 2017 the recipient and winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, if you will, for international sabotage. Yeah. We're in fact advancing his name. We're just a single black commentator on a blog radio program. We're advancing the name of Vladimir Putin as the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize for international disaster for the job they did of taking a Russian sleeper and putting them into what we now call the Western Kremlin, if you will. Now, let us move quickly into the last 20-some minutes of the local things. By the way, continued violence here in our own beloved Shangri-La, if you will. 5 shot over the weekend, 2 killed right in the heart of downtown Minneapolis. But this is not new. For the last 6 or 7 years, there has been a significant level of violence, much of it driven by drugs and et cetera, and no one appears or pretends that they know what the problem is, certainly know what the problem is. Drugs being brought into Minnesota via Chicago by Mexican and Colombian cartels, if you will. It has drained the life out of the African-American community here in the Twin Cities, just as it is doing in Chicago and other places around the country. In fact, for those that are historically astute with regards to Southern California and et cetera, who know the history of Los Angeles for the last 50 to 60 years, ever since the days of the Zoot Suits way back in 1940 and 41 in L.A., will tell you who it is that has oftentimes driven this particular train and been the proxies to bring the drugs and et cetera into the African-American community. That's what's happened here. And, in fact, the situation is out of control, if you will. Again, 5 individuals shot and 2 killed, if you will, in the heart of downtown Minneapolis. The White Chamber of Commerce and the Downtown Council are, in fact, article in today's edition, yesterday's edition, and the day before that of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, in which the Downtown Council, the captains of industry, as they should be referred to, are demanding that the Negro problem, yes, yes, yes. See, most of my leaders don't have the guts to indicate what's being whispered to them by their funding sources as they sit by the trough, if you will, the slop trough, if you will, the same kind of trough that a pig would put his snout into, if you will, and drink the slop and the water. My black leaders, you're being told by your captains of industry, handlers, and et cetera, get on top of this problem and get it done now, or there will be no quote-unquote consideration, if you will. There will be no assets made available. Our organizations are already dying, if you will. A effort right now at Sabathany Community Center, known locally here, a young African-American woman, if you will, Cindy Booker, doing a tremendous job, desperately trying to keep that organization active for the African-American community, being forced out by her primarily and majority, very much majority, white board, if you will. We have found a African-American and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Miller, who had been serving as Mr. Miller, who used to work for General Mills, had been serving as the board chair, had began to put together the plan to remove the current African-American director, putting the Sabathany Community Center under the control of Caucasian overseers and into the hands of the Latino Hispanic community. By the way, the Hispanics have taken control of the former Urban League facility there on 38th and 4th, just a block and a half away from Sabathany. But Sabathany is about to be lost, if you will, and it is clear that a very courageous African-American director is being forced out by people who do no longer reside in the city of Minneapolis. Mr. Miller and his wife have relocated, going to work for Coca-Cola, had relocated to Atlanta, Georgia, where he says that he, Mr. Miller, says that he comes back once a month to preside over a meeting of the board of Sabathany Community Center and keeping that organization moving to total and absolute control. The board is already controlled by Caucasians, if you will. Now, there are six vacancies on that board, and I was shocked, by the way, when I heard that one of the most distinguished African-American activists, businessmen, and et cetera, William English, former director of affirmative action for the Controlled Data Corporation, if you will, years ago, one of the founders, one of the individuals that structured Sabathany into a community center, if you will, again, William English, denied a seat on the board by a majority of whites who maintain that he did not bring the appropriate credentials to have a seat on the board of Sabathany. Sabathany Community Center, on the way out, if you will. Now, on the other hand, there is applause to a number of African-Americans on the south side and the north side, Minneapolis City Council voting to declare Pilgrim Rest Church in the far end of North Minneapolis and a housing, single housing enclave there right in the central part of the so-called central neighborhood as historical preservation pieces for the Negro community. First time in history that that has happened here. Again, Pilgrim Rest and the housing complex there in central Minneapolis. Now, we are compelled in the last 13 minutes. We owe it to the 10 young men who have been so violated by the University of Minnesota, if you will. As we already know, we have a new white coach. This is a real jazzy little white cat, or whatever you get for Western Michigan. The president of the University of Minnesota seems to be a little sensitive lately here in the last couple of days, particularly because of our program last week where we pointed out that negotiations had been going on with the new head coach of the University of Minnesota, who was brought in to change the culture and quote-unquote put Negroes in their place, if you will, because that was his claim to fame at Western Michigan. All y'all, many of y'all know that. DJ Flick, little slick, pop-talking, hip-hop-talking white guy, if you will. He sounded like a snake oil salesman, if you will, when he was introduced by the athletic director. But the person that masterminded a very racist agenda was the president of the University of Minnesota. And just yesterday, he had the audacity to go over to the Minnesota legislature and ask for another $148,000 in funding, if you will, a very significant increase. The University of Minnesota already receives, I don't know what it's, $1.5 billion. But the president had the nerve to say that the money was not to pay off and bring in all these new white coaches, if you will. E.J. Fleck is being paid $18.5 million over 5 years. This guy ain't won a Big Ten game yet. But the key was, in the secret negotiations, oh, that's the other thing. Y'all over at the University of Minnesota, and particularly the president of the institution and the athletic director, Mr. Coyle, know that you had been meeting with him secretly for the last 2 months. You never had any intention of ever allowing Tracy Clays the chance to continue to coach the University of Minnesota. When this situation of an alleged sexual assault took place, it gave you the opening that you needed, including a couple of members of the Board of Regents, if you will. One who is the chair, a minister, former state legislator, Dean Johnson, if you will, who has a big white church in Wilmer, Minnesota, which I don't think he invites any African-Americans to attend. But one of the so-called secrets that has taken place, and part of that it's a small part of that $148 million, will be to satisfy Western Michigan University, who has known for quite some time that the University of Minnesota tampered with P.J. Fleck, if you will. In fact, let me give you a quick narrative, if you will, tonight. So we owe it to the young African-American 10 who have been railroaded, if you will, and will be expelled from the University of Minnesota, if you will. I hope that as many young African Americans who have the depth and the savvy to understand the racism make a decision to at least go somewhere else. I again also refer people to my comments over a decade ago in the book Under the Tarnished Dome, an examination of Lou Holtz at Notre Dame and the University of Minnesota, when in 1985 I predicted that this was an oasis of racism and apartheid and et cetera, that African Americans really were not welcomed here and were only exploited, if you will. And one of the things that members of the Board of Regents discussed in that five-hour meeting before you fired Tracy Clase, a good man, a man who really cared for his players and stood up for him. And one of the things that was said at San Diego at the Holiday Bowl, where you already knew that you were not going to retain him, you were going to fire him. In fact, the reason the athletic director and the president of the University of Minnesota were on the sidelines, there are the pictures of them with their arms folded, looking defiant and angry, because they were expecting some kind of rebellion and disobedience by the black players, and they were going to fire Tracy Clase the next morning, if you will, that Wednesday morning. It didn't happen. It didn't work out. You had to go back to the drawing board, Mr. President of the University of Minnesota, and athletic director Coy from Waterloo, Iowa, and et cetera. You had to go back to the drawing board. And then what you did, you called Tracy Clase on a Friday after the Tuesday game, if you will, and you said, yeah, we'll get together next week and we'll talk about your future. Well, you know, Tracy Clase is not an idiot, if you will. He recognized that something was up, and of course what was up was that the decision had already been made to fire him. The decision to fire Tracy Clase had been made before the University of Minnesota got on the airplane to fly to the Holiday Bowl game in San Diego, where they met and defeated a very high-ranked and favorite Washington State team. Keep that in mind tonight here in the Twin Cities of Minnesota and Minneapolis, is that Tracy Clase had already, the determination had been made. Now, what happened on that Tuesday as they prepared for that 2:30 meeting, if you will, a week ago, this past Tuesday, that what was at play was that you had to come up with another narrative. And one of the things that you people did, members of the Board of Regents, the good white folks at the University of Minnesota, including its president and the dean and the chairman of the Board of Regents, you said, what we will do that will appeal to the majority of white people. They don't care nothing about black folks. They think that black folk, including citizens and residents of the state of Minnesota, are just nothing but some property, something to be swept aside, periodically something to be experimented with, because we haven't even began to talk about the kind of experimental medicine that is now going on at the University of Minnesota. In fact, President Kellen had the nerve before the legislature yesterday to say that he wanted to get another, with the $146 million, that within that would be about $30 million to help poor Negroes and do more experimental medicine on little black children and et cetera. This university, particularly under the auspices of Dr. Chiquette, and I refer you to Dr. Chiquette, and I refer you to the book Medical Apartheid, if you will, which talks in terms of Dr. Chiquette and his involvement in a very interesting medical program with Columbia University in New York City and in Harlem and in the Bronx. Hey, it's all about experimenting on the black folks, if you will. But back to Tracy Clase, back to a decent individual, back to a man who stood with his black ball players and so angered the president of the University of Minnesota, the athletic director, the chairman of the Board of Regents, a man of God, a man of the cloth, if you will. In that five-hour meeting, as we reported on last week's program and on our television program, it got so hot in there, they were so upset that they started talking about, tar, code word, by the way, for blacks, and tar fields and such things as that. These were people who have such disdain for the sons and daughters of the African. Yes, I'm talking about members of the Board of Regents, if you will, the president of the university, the athletic director, et cetera. By the way, this president had the nerve yesterday before the Minnesota legislature to talk about the great things that he wanted to do, how he wanted to be involved in experimental medicine on, quote-unquote, the disadvantaged and underprivileged neighborhoods. And so that's always the cold word when white folks are talking to each other about the black problem, if you will. And he had the audacity to stay there when the reputation of this University of Minnesota has been a number of projects that rank right up there with the Tuskegee experiment. And I will leave you with two of them tonight on this program when you talk in terms of dangerous medicine. And again, the book, Medical Apartheid, I give you the sickle cell projects that you allegedly were working on at the University of Minnesota over a 20-year period, if you will, and the kind of experimental medicine you are coordinating now in North Minneapolis at the UROC Center, if you will, and then just up the block on the other side of the Minneapolis Urban League, the county's North Point facility. You people are involved with experimental medicine. You are doing irreparable harm and damage to the very future of the African-American community with the kind of drugs and et cetera that you are using. In fact, you have a secret contract, University of Minnesota in Hennepin County, with some of the pharmaceutical companies. And you are having African-American mothers and fathers come in with their babies and with their children, and you are giving them this experimental medicine which is causing irreversible harm. The same thing that the University of Minnesota did in 1972 and periodically after that at a place called Harrison Grade School, where you experimented with African-American babies, African-American children, and et cetera. That is how insidious thinking of white folks in this state has become, if you will. And I don't want you to forget the great man that you brought in, the man that could have done justice to Nazi experimental medicine, or could have done justice to the experimental medicine at the Veterans Hospital in Tuskegee, Alabama, many, many, many years ago. Dr. Cecchetti, a man who answers to no one in the performance of his experimental medicine at the University of Minnesota, operating out of the facility, two facilities, one controlled by the county, the other controlled by his employer, the University of Minnesota. My friends, and what has happened, the leadership of the African-American community have told, shh, 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 keep quiet, don't say nothing, we'll take care of you, you know. These are not your kind of people. And sometimes when some of you meet over there at UROC, oh, you know who you are, and you are having orange juice and donuts and et cetera on Saturday morning, and periodically you look out the windows there, looking out onto Plymouth Avenue and et cetera, and you laugh and make jokes about those African Americans that you see who are a part of the neighborhood, a part of the community, and et cetera. That's why, by the way, this community is in the process of losing its radio station, KMOJ. Oh, yes, you think that people have forgotten about it, if you will. The general manager of the station took down the website in which he initially was making the announcement that they had, quote-unquote, entered into a partnership with Hubbard Broadcasting, the very powerful conservative media company, flagship KSTP Channel 5 here, KSTP Radio 1500 on the dial, and et cetera. Yes, yes, your radio station is getting ready to be gone. What has happened is that some of the brothers, Steve Belton of the Urban League, William English, Alfred Flowers, and others who are desperately trying to raise the $150,000 that, quote-unquote, needs to be raised to save radio station KMOJ, cannot be accomplished. It is a sad notation in closing tonight. This, on the occasion, once again, Martin Luther King Jr. Month, if you will, the history, the rich history, the courageous history of a great American who just happened to be black, if you will. And yet we are losing everything. St. Paul lost its urban league, if you will. Only the Hallie Q. Brown Community Center hangs on under strong leadership. In Minneapolis, we're losing everything. And at Sabathany, we're going to repeat this again, at Sabathany Community Center, a very courageous African-American, a daughter of the South Side, raised and bred in South Minneapolis, being pushed out by an all-white board, if you will, allegedly, quote-unquote, being presided over by an African-American who now works for Coca-Cola, periodically, once a month, comes back to continue to preside over the demise of Sabathany Community Center. We are a community in bad shape, my friends. In fact, for those listening across the country, across the world, offer a prayer for the black population of Minnesota, in particular the black populations of Minneapolis and St. Paul. God knows that we need the spiritual strength of the Almighty. We are here are truly an endangered species, if you will. All that we once had has been taken away from us. All that we once dreamed about have been shattered. All that we had such great pride in and such vision, we have been blinded. The African-American population of the Twin Cities of the state of Minnesota, it's like the University of Minnesota region said just a couple hours before they fired Tracy Clay, that the one thing we must rid ourselves of are those who look like, who have any sympathy whatsoever for the Negro, for the sons and daughters of the African. That's the kind of place we live in here in Minnesota, if you will. It is clearly the citadel of racism at its most extreme. I repeat that again, racism at its most extreme. We are at the bottom of the totem pole. See, no one wants to talk about this in closing. We are at the bottom of the totem pole in everything except incarceration. The percentage of African Americans incarcerated, and that's where Jeff Sessions comes in, because if they can put Negroes away in the penitentiary like they do in Minnesota around the rest of the country, Jeff Sessions, as the new incoming attorney general, we'll have no problem with, quote-unquote, renewed massive incarceration, because that's the only thing that we lead in, and we lead from the bottom. Everything else, education, housing, economic stability, and et cetera, the African-American of Minnesota is at the bottom of the totem pole. And in the last 85 seconds that we have tonight, let us continue to remember the dream. In fact, white folks got us in the place where we don't even talk about remembering the dream anymore. They have beat us down that path. We will say a prayer ourselves and hope that many of you will join us for the African-American population in the state of Minnesota and in the Twin Cities. We are truly an endangered species. God bless you, my black brothers and sisters, and may the hand of God be placed upon your shoulder, not to push you over the cliff, but to give you the strength and the internal discipline to hang on, because the beast is on the move. God bless you. We will be back with you next week. Good night.